The Guardian.
The Guardian Books Podcast with Claire Armistead.
Travel writing, from the poles to the equator.
The best book ever written about the polar regions, without any doubt, is Apsley Cherry Garrard's The Worst Journey in the World. And that book begins with the immortal line, "Polar exploration is the cleanest way of having a bad time which has been devised." If the Antarctic's a symbol of what could be, the Arctic's a symbol of what the Earth is.
There was no cathartic awakening or joyful homecoming. No matter how much my dislike of the village had diminished and my respect for my relatives had grown, any new romanticised perspectives quickly evaporated in the steaming humidity. City like Lagos, you have up to 15 million people in this totally ungoverned city. There are hardly any traffic lights, and so people have to jostle, struggle and to fight to make their way through, whether it's physically or financially.
As you may have gathered, this week's podcast will take you to some of the hottest and coldest places on Earth. In the case of Noor Sarawiwa's new travel book Looking for Trans Wonderland, the heat is not simply climatic. It transported her back to the land of her father, Nigeria, a place where the political temperature also seems constantly on the boil. Her father, Ken Sarawiwa, was a famous campaigner for the rights of the Ogoni people to share the wealth generated by the oil being mined on their land. In particular, he wanted it spent on restoring the environmental degradation caused by the oil industry. But he upset the military government so much that they eventually executed him. Noor had been brought up and educated in England, and her father's death meant she had no interest in returning to her homeland, even though she became a travel writer specialising in Africa. Until, that is, she decided to write her first book on what she describes as my unglamorous, godforsaken motherland with its penchant for noise and disorder. She joined us here in the studio, along with Isabel Choate of the Guardian Travel Desk, and began by reading us a short passage from the book.
As I sat in a Danfo at a bus stop, a man walked past pushing a cake-laden trolley. He was drawing the attention of customers by blasting the recording of a baby's screams from loudspeakers. He sniggered at my horrified reaction. As my bus waited to fill up with passengers, a beggar hopped on board and faced the passengers. Intoning like a church pastor, he began a very long speech detailing his sad life story in Liberia. But far from drawing sympathy, the beggar's laboured, inarticulate ramblings only irritated the buck-toothed old man next to me. "I beg, what is your point?" he barked at the beggar, who snapped his mouth shut immediately. The old man angrily rummaged his pocket for some naira notes. "I'm tired of your mad talk," he muttered, before pressing hush money into the Liberian's palm. The beggar jumped off the bus, and the old man let out a disgruntled sigh. "Where are you from?" he asked me once the bus got moving. "I'm Nigerian," I said, disappointed that he'd discerned that I was a diasporan. "What makes you think I'm not?" "You don't look like a Nigerian. You dress like those YMCA girls," he said. "And I can see you staring out of the window. You are looking around curiously. You cannot come from Lagos." YMCA girl, that was a new one. Most passers-by asked me if I was a footballer because I wore running shoes all the time. We chatted all the way back to Satellite Town. We found ourselves disembarking at the same stop, walking down the same side street through the same market. It turned out the old man, his name was Julius, lived 5 minutes away from Auntie Janice. He invited me to his house for lunch.
Hello, Noor. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You've got a particularly troubled history with Nigeria. Can you tell us a bit about that background?
My relationship with Nigeria obviously started right from when I was a child. We had to go back every summer, nearly every summer. For me, with my massive wanderlust, I found that really frustrating. So obviously, as we got older and my father got more involved in his campaign against Shell, you know, he went to prison and then ultimately he was murdered by the military dictatorship. And so that really soured my relationship with Nigeria. All those events in 1995 really cemented that view that I wanted nothing to do with Nigeria. It just reminded me of really depressing and negative things.
Can you tell us a bit about what made you want to go back?
Well, I'd done so much travel around Africa in itself and to quite random countries in Africa that are off the tourist trail. And so I developed a real taste for travelling around the continent. And it got to a point where I started to look at Nigeria in a different light as a result, because I went to Ivory Coast and Guinea and Togo and Benin and Gabon, Sao Tome, all these places around Nigeria within the West African region. I realised after a point, well, if I've enjoyed all these other countries and they're so much smaller than Nigeria, Nigeria must have something to offer as well.
Much of the journey you describe is frustrating, challenging, but there are also beautiful places too. What were the highlights of the journey for you?
In terms of like tourism and beauty, the Cross River State in the southeast of the country was amazing. It's a well-run state. They've made a real effort to attract tourists. And so you've got rainforests that have been preserved, and you have chimpanzees and gorillas and drill monkeys, which are a species of monkeys that are only found really in Nigeria. And they're beautiful. They're like these, they look like baboons, grey baboons, but they've got this amazing like pink and blue, bright blue fur on their buttocks. I also love the north. You've got the Durbar Festival, which is held once a year, and the emir is treated to a horse parade by his loyal guards. And that was absolutely stunning. It's so beautiful. You've got hundreds of men on horses. Everyone's dressed up in shiny material, including the horses themselves. And it's just this magnificent display that I've never seen anywhere else in West Africa.
The extract you've just read shows that the book's as much about the people you meet as the places you see, your fellow bus passengers, hawkers, hotel workers, government officials. What part do these characters play in shaping your view of the country?
Well, I think without speaking to the actual people, you're not going to get a sense of what Nigeria is about. And I think that's a problem that you have in Africa generally. It's viewed from a very long distance perspective. And if you want to understand the chaos, if you want to understand the decrepitude, all the negative things, you have to actually speak to the people in order to really know why the country is the way it is, and that it actually isn't the sum of its parts, you know, because people as individuals are incredible. They have so many struggles, and you know, there are reasons for why they do what they do. And so without talking to them, you're not going to really understand what it is that makes that country tick. And so it was fascinating. In a city like Lagos, you have up to 15 million people in this totally ungoverned city. Ungoverned in the sense that there are hardly any traffic lights and that sort of thing. And so people have to jostle, they have to struggle and to fight to make their way through, whether it's physically or financially. And that in turn, you know, affects the way people behave. And you see people in a very different light when you actually talk to them on an everyday level.
When you finally find some calm, a moment in the forest, you say that you miss that chaos that initially frustrated you. Did that become one of the big attractions for you towards the end of your journey?
Yeah, I never like places that are too sterile. So even as a child, I loved Disneyland. But for me now as an adult, Disneyland is the the complete opposite of what I want out of travel. It's just, it's far too clean and sterile and artificial. So I do like that jaga-jaga, as they say in Nigeria, that sort of unpredictability and chaos. It can get a bit much sometimes,